Woo, woo. Hey, man, they really got me turned up today, baby. I'm hot. All right. Everybody turn to your neighbor and say, hello. All right, just give them a little creepy maybe if you want. Everybody needs a little creepy in their life. If you're on Facebook Live, give us a thumbs up or say good morning to somebody. I wanted to, because our worship got interrupted, and how many of you, is the news just driving you crazy lately? Like, I think they just want to make us anxiety riddled as a society, right? And we sang that song, It Is Well. And I did this with the first service. We didn't plan on doing it. And I'd like to do it with you guys if we could. I'd like, if you know the words to it, if you don't, you can just listen. But I'd like us to just sing the song, It Is Well, together as a church. No band, no light. I'm going to even have them shut off the lights up here. I know it won't work well for Facebook Live. Sorry, just sing with us at home. But I want to hear the Church of God singing this morning. And so if you guys would sing with me, we're going to sing this. We're going to shut off the lights. We're just going to sing it as well, all right? So it goes like this. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul. Just repeat after me, ready? It is well with my soul. It is well, it is well with my soul. Jesus, I pray that this morning, as we enter into this time to just be with you, that God, we would put aside all of the all the distractions. There are so many things trying to call our attention to it that are not you. I pray that this morning we would be focused on you, that our hearts would be given over to you, and that God, we would just slow down enough to enjoy being in your presence and to know that no matter what this world throws at us, it is well with our soul. And it's well because there is nothing that can separate me from the love of Christ. Not one iota, not one little thing can separate me from that. I love you, Jesus. I pray for anybody in here who's facing really difficult trials in life, really difficult medical diagnoses, loss in their life, relationships that are broken, feel like they're falling apart. I pray that this morning, Jesus, your peace that surpasses all understanding would be their peace. We love you. I just invite you into this time. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. So, this is not how I planned on starting my sermon. So, I'm going to start it this way. Does anybody, we're in this series called Blessed. Does anybody remember what the B is? Boom. Look, I'm like a weatherman. Does anybody remember what the B is for Bless? Begin with prayer, right? Yeah. So if you remember, this series is all about how do we bless our neighbors? How do we not just go out and in a weird, uncomfortable way try to share Jesus with them where it ends up feeling bad for you and it feels bad for them as well, but for you to do this in a way that actually honors the way human beings actually work. For us to really care about people and to really, and so we're using this idea of blessing them, and we're asking all of you to begin with prayer. And what that means is we created these journals. They're free journals for you. You can grab one. They're at the communion tables on your way out or during communion today. Grab one of these. It's a free gift from us to you. But they're super simple. We've asked you in these journals to create what we call my circle. And this is a circle of 8 people that in your life are people who are far from God, that you're praying for them. And you're just bringing them before God and saying, God, if there's a way that I can help make a difference in this person's life, would you use me? And you're praying over these people every single day of the week, and you're spending time with God, and you're beginning with prayer. What is the L? Does anybody remember the L? Come on, feedback to me, folks. Listen, yeah, baby, listen. All right, so this one, if you remember, we talked about how hard it is to truly listen to people. What most of the time is happening is we're all thinking about what we want to say next. We're thinking about our funny story to tell. We hear something and we're like, oh, or we feel like we have to impress people or whatever it is. And we talked about how Jesus had this unique ability to, in the middle of all the pressure in the world, to push the pressure off and to give himself 100% to the person that was in front of him. And so we asked for you is for you to give yourself away by thinking of yourself less. Do you remember this? That you would listen and you would give yourself away by thinking of yourself less, to be fully present when you're with people. And so today we come to the E in bless. And the E is probably one of my favorite ones. This is like one of my top spiritual gifts, all right? So does anybody know what the E is? Eat! Yeah, it's to eat together, alright? So, if this sermon had been about eating and sleeping, man, it would be like the best sermon in the world. But it's just about eating, I'm sorry. Those are my two top spiritual gifts, eating and sleeping. This morning, we're gonna be talking about eating together. And I need to tell you, I think this feels like a weird thing initially to even be talking about in church. You're like, I don't understand. Why? Why would you spend an entire 30-minute sermon talking about the need to eat together? But I think as we unpack this, you'll start to see just how important this whole principle and this practice can be in the life of your personal ministry. I want you to think about how often, as humans, we eat together. It is kind of the primary way we bring intimacy into our lives and our relationship. Like, for instance, when we celebrate something, do you know what we do? We eat. Yeah, all right, let's practice this, all right? I'm going to ask a bunch of questions, and pretty much the answer is going to be eat. So it's a super simple test, all right? So when we celebrate something, we
eat.
Right? You guys are looking like you knew the answer before I even asked the question. We eat together, right? So you take your kids, they play some baseball, and they win, and you take them out to eat, right? You're gonna eat ice cream. Your kids lose at baseball, and now in today's world, what do? You eat, because who cares? You still played some baseball, and we eat ice cream whether you win or lose. Now, if, you know what we do when people are mourning and grieving? What do? We eat. What do we do when we are trying to woo the hand of somebody that we love? Huh? Come on, you eat. You also rub their hand with your pinky to try to get them to hold your hand, alright? I know, but you eat together. This is what we do. I told the first service that when Jenny and I were first dating, we would go out to eat, and we'd be eating and just looking at each other's eyes with lots of love, and Jenny would, if she was eating something that was really delicious, she would be like, "Do you want a bite?" And she would feed me a bite, and I was like, "Oh, now when we eat, she's like, I'm like, "Can I have a bite of your food?" And she's like, "No, get your own," you know? It's because I eat way too much of her food. She's got to protect it. We eat together all the time. This is what we do. It is how we're intimate. You know what you, I don't know if you're like us, but when we go on vacation, we try to find great places to
eat.
Don't you do this? This is what humans do. So much so that Pizza Hut, remember they used to say, gather around the good stuff? They understood what so many of us have seemed to have forgotten, that this is what people do around food, is we gather around it and we're intimate with each other in those places. And the reality is, you know as well as I do, it is hard to keep yourself up at a higher level than somebody else and to feel superior to them when you've got a piece of lettuce that just fell out of your mouth and you've got salad dressing all over your beard and you're like, ah, you look like a goober. That, because it's hard when you're eating together to think you're superior, to think you're better, to think anything. It opens up all this intimacy. There were actually studies that were done that showed that people who had maybe some prejudices or thought they were from different classes, that when they ate together, they actually viewed one another as more on the same level as everybody else. It changes the way we perceive people. It changes the way we interact with people. And I want you to know this. I know it seems like a really simplistic topic, but I'm telling you, Jesus knew this. He knew that eating together undermines things that other people, like, that it undermines kind of the walls that we put up and allows us to be intimate with each other. And Jesus knew this. As a matter of fact, there are at least 14 instances where the scripture talks about meals that Jesus was involved in with others. 14 instances where the scripture refers to Jesus eating. Sometimes he's feeding people. Sometimes he's having a more intimate meal. Sometimes it's a large party. So much so that I want to point something out to you that maybe you didn't even know. People used to make fun of Jesus for how much he ate. If you're fat, that like vindicates you, right? You're like, oh man, I'm with Jesus here. Like, people made fun of me for eating a lot, and Jesus got made fun of for eating a lot, so I'm like Jesus, right? Like, let me prove this to you. You ready for it? Matthew 11 through 19 says this. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. Now he's in the middle of talking, doing this little talk about John the Baptist, and he's talking about how it doesn't really matter what you do, nobody's gonna like it anyway. That's kind of Jesus' point. And he says that John the Baptist didn't come a certain way and people had this view about him. And so then he says, the Son of Man, referring to himself, I came eating and drinking. This is what I did. When I came around, I ate with people and I drank with them. And this isn't just that he drank grape juice. Jesus was drinking wine. He was drinking. And this is what people are saying about him. Listen, they're saying, here is a glutton and a drunkard. Did you know people called Jesus a drunkard? Did you know people called him a fatty? That's basically what they're calling him. He is a glutton and he is a drunkard. And why are they saying it? They're saying he's a friend of tax collectors and sinners. And Jesus says this, but wisdom is proved right by her deeds. You'll know it when you see it. Jesus, listen to this, Jesus was so committed to eating with people who were far from God that he was willing to suffer ridicule for it. People mocked him. And I know some of you are super secure in yourselves and you could handle people making fun of you and ridiculing you all day long. But tell me, when you've worked at a place where people gossip behind your back, that it doesn't just at some point get to you. Tell me, when people have made fun of you growing up as a kid, that some of the hardness that you have as an outer exterior now is all because they mocked you and they made fun of you and you had to figure out how to be tough. Tell me it doesn't get to you. And Jesus was willing to put himself in a position not just to die for you, but to be ridiculed for you, to be mocked, to be made fun of, to be misunderstood. He's misunderstood. Jesus was so committed to eating with people who are far from God that he was willing to take ridicule for it. See, as I think about this whole idea of eating together and eating with other people, mentioned that Jesus ate with sinners, tax collectors. I have to tell you, it's hard for me. Like, I started thinking about how hard this hits me. Because I had to start asking myself this question. Is there enough evidence in my own life? Is there enough evidence in my own life to say that Kent loves people who are far from God so much that there's enough evidence to make jokes about him because of it? Is there? How about you? Is there enough evidence in your life that you have given your life so much away to people who are lost, to people who are hurting, people who are on the outside? You know that Jesus hung out with prostitutes? Prostitutes. Think about it for a minute. Get off your religious, like, stuff that you have in your head and let that settle into your soul. Your pastor had a bunch of prostitutes and a bunch of IRS guys over to his house last night. What do you think about that? Jesus is willing. It just blows my mind. And I sit there and I look at myself and I go, is there enough evidence in my own life? Is there enough evidence in my own life that would say Kent could be made fun of because he spends so much time with the wrong kind of people? Because for Jesus there was. See, I think as Americans, and this is not to let us off the hook, but it is to kind of explain, I think as Americans, we've gotten really good at a few things. Like, any of you work in Lexington? Maybe you used to. Now you don't have to drive down there anymore because you commute. But how many of you work at least 5 minutes away from where you live? Anybody in here? All right. A few of you, if you're online, let us know if that's you. Most of us kind of work in other places, and so what we do is we get in our car and we drive to where we work by ourselves. We go into where we work and we sit at our little cubicle where we work by ourselves or in our office by ourselves. And maybe you do the old walk around. walk around with your coffee and you're like, hey, it's Monday, you know, and you're talking to people with your cup of coffee, you do your 15 minutes of walking around, and then you go back to your office by yourself and you work all day by yourself and you take a few phone calls by yourself, and then you get in your car by yourself and you go home by yourself and you open the garage door and you drive in and you shut the garage door behind yourself. And then you go in and you put your headphones on so nobody will talk to you while you mow your lawn behind your privacy fence so that nobody can see you and doesn't know you're there. And you're by yourself all the time. See, I think Americans have become masters at keeping to ourselves. So much so, let me just ask you, how many of you would rather get a text than a phone call? Raise your hand if that's you. Yeah. I think most of the time people kind of in my generation and down, that's what we'd prefer. I would prefer to get a text over a phone call. I just would. But it's part of our culture that we are moving more and more separated. We want to, privacy is a huge issue. So much so that when you get on a website, you have to click, does it annoy anybody else that you have to accept the little privacy thing? Because they're so worried about your privacy, because we're all so worried about our privacy, keeping our lives private and separated. And I need to just talk to you as a Christian. And this is something that has become more and more evident to me as our culture moves further and further away from Christ, is that as our culture goes one direction, Christians need to be evaluating according to the scripture what direction your life should be going. Because we are called to something better and something different. And just because the world is moving towards more and more privacy and more disconnection does not mean that as a Christian you should follow. And you need to do this with every area of your life. You need to evaluate it according to Jesus, because there is some point where you are going to separate from this culture. You will be different. I guarantee you, you're called out. See, our world has become very separated, has become very privacy focused, has become all about me behind my privacy fence, sitting by myself with my coffee in the morning. But this wasn't the way of Jesus. It wasn't his way. So much so that people made fun of him, called him a fatsy drunkie. I don't know if that's how they said it exactly, but fatso drunko. Let me take you to an instance. Check this out. This is Jesus. I just want to take you to one story of him eating together. And I think it's a primary story because he explains why he does this. He explains why he's willing to put himself into the position of ridicule. This comes from Mark chapter 2, verse 13 through 17. Ready for it? Here we go. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. He is by he's by Capernaum. He's out by the Sea of Galilee. He's out by the lake and he's teaching. A large crowd has came to him and he began to teach them, it says. As he walked along the shore, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. And Jesus says two very simple words that to me betray a whole lot more that's happening here. Jesus, as he walks by Levi, who is also known as Matthew, Mark is calling him Levi in this gospel, but we know from other gospels, this other story being told, that his name is actually also Matthew, and that's what he will go by once he becomes a Christian, and you will know him as the person who wrote the gospel of Matthew. That guy is sitting at a tax collector's booth. Jesus walks past him and says these two words. He says, follow me. And look at what happens. Jesus told him this, and Levi got up, and he followed him. Here's what is incredible about this passage. See, those two words betray something that maybe you and I don't see until you slow yourself down to think about the story. Matthew, or Levi, is sitting at his tax collector's booth. He is near the Sea of Galilee. He is near where Jesus has been teaching. He has likely been able to hear everything that Jesus is teaching. He has likely been, and I think that because of his reaction, it's so instantaneous, right? He hears Jesus say, follow me, and what does he do? He doesn't go, well, let me get my stuff together. He just stands up and he follows him. He's been able to see Jesus healing people. But here's what's even more incredible to me than all of that. Jesus is teaching along the Sea of Galilee, and do you know every person that he has been teaching, they all have a relationship with Matthew. Did you know that? They all have a relationship with Matthew. Because every day when they go out to fish and they catch their load of fish and they come back through, they have to pass by Matthew's tax collector booth. This is why he's there, to collect taxes. When they come by, Matthew takes his cut every time. You need to picture a loan shark when you hear tax collector. You need to picture somebody who is taking, this is not IRS where there's a set amount and good night. We all know that the set amount is still not very fun when you know exactly what it's going to be. Like, does anybody in here send your tax collector, your IRS person? Do you send them a Christmas card? Anybody send the IRS? Nobody sends the IRS a Christmas card? Wouldn't that be funny if we all did that this year? Yeah, they didn't either, right? They hated this. And here's what the quick and dirty about tax collectors during Jesus' day is how they made their money. Was they would bid on how much taxes they could collect from Rome. And then whatever they could collect above and beyond that, they got to keep and put into their own pockets. They could collect as much as they wanted as long as they didn't incite incite a fight from the people, all right? My whole job is words and I can't do it right now. Insurrection, that's the word, I'm so sorry. As long as they didn't incite an insurrection, everything was fine. But they would tax you, and if they thought they could tax you X number of dollars or X amount of fish or whatever beyond what they had bid for, they would tax you. And so what it meant for these people who had been listening to Jesus teach and hearing him say things like, blessed are the poor. They were poor because of Matthew. Because Matthew taxed them as much as he possibly could. Imagine for a moment that you couldn't put food on your table sometimes for your kids. And the reason you couldn't was because Matthew was lining his pockets with your money. And here he is sitting at the tax collector's booth. He is on the outside of everyone else. And he's sitting there. And as Jesus walks by, I love this picture. I wish we could have been there to see it. Because Jesus walks by and I just picture him going, follow me. And I picture Matthew just like, I don't know if his eyes burst into tears. I picture him just dropping everything. And just like a laser, because he's heard Jesus talking about all of this stuff that his money can't buy. Joy, peace. He's heard about this sense of self that you could find this kingdom of God that could come in and change and rearrange everything in your life. And guess what? You can't buy it. Matthew hasn't had any hope in his life. He hasn't had any joy. He hasn't had any peace. Matthew has been on the outside for his entire life. Ever since he said yes to Rome, he said no to every other Jewish person. He's not allowed in the temple. He's not allowed at synagogue. His family has likely disowned him. And Matthew has been sitting there, listening to Jesus, wishing. You ever wished you could be a part of the crowd? He's been wishing. Be a part of the crowd, but he knows he can't. Until that moment that Jesus speaks two words to him, follow me. And Levi gets up and he leaves everything. Listen to this, verse 15. What does Jesus do next? While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house. I love it, because if you didn't know, Jesus was also homeless. Not only was he a drunkard and a glutton, what people called him, he really wasn't. But he also was homeless. He didn't have his own home. And so he goes to Levi's house to eat. And this is what it says. Many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. Everybody wants to see what's going on. When I was a little kid, I was late elementary school. My brother came to my dad. He said, hey, Dad, he was in high school at the time. He said, Dad, could I just have a few buddies over this Friday night? This was early in the week. My dad was like, yeah, sure, we'll get some pizza, you know, bring them over. So later, a little bit into the week, my brother was like, hey, Dad, word kind of got out. There's a few more people coming. Would it be okay if like a few more people came? My dad was like, yeah, sure, that's okay. We'll just get some more, you know. And then like close to the time, my brother was like, Dad, it kind of got out around school. Like there's a lot of people coming. Would it be okay if we just hung out in the backyard? And my dad was like, yeah, sure, no problem. You guys just hang. Well, I'll get some stuff, movies for the little kids. And, you know, we'll do stuff inside. You guys can have the outside. Well, I'll never forget. I'm sitting on the couch watching like, you know, Dracula or something. And my dad gets this call. This is before cell phone. It's the phone with the wire attached to it. and he gets a call, and there's a neighbor of ours is on the phone, and he is irate. He goes, "Wagner?" And my dad's like, "Yeah?" And he's like, "Did you know that there's kids all over your backyard and all over the whole block?" And my dad steps outside, and there are literally like 1,000 kids on our entire block is filled with teenagers all over the place. The backyard is filled, like this is something out of a movie kind of thing. We spent the next like 4 hours, my brother and I, walking up and down the street picking up like red Solo cups and bottles and all this. It was crazy. This party just broke out. Jesus goes for dinner at Levi's, and I don't know why they're all there. I don't know if there's some looky-loos that want to see what he's going to do. I don't know why, but there is this party that's breaking out there. Jesus is eating with them, and there's all these people who've come to be a part of it. And listen to what happens. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and the tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? Why does he do this?" This would be the question you would have too. Don't judge them too harshly. If you saw me hanging out at an after party of a bunch of people who worked at a certain type of club that you could find in Lexington, I was at their after party, wouldn't you want to know the same thing about me? What in the world are you doing with these people, Kent? Right? Don't judge them too harshly yet. It will be their response to what his response is that matters. But right now, they're just trying to figure out, what's he doing? Why is he hanging out at the bars kind of thing? And this is what Jesus says. On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." It is not the healthy who need a doctor. It is the sick. I've not come to call the righteous but sinners. Can you imagine? Imagine just for a moment that somebody had come up with an actual cure for COVID. Like no more deaths from it. No more even getting sick from it. You could just give it to somebody who is in the hospital, in the ICU, and it would save their lives, right? That comes out. FDA approves it. Everybody's good. It's been distributed to every single hospital in the world. And you go to UK, let's say, and you go into the hospital and you go into their ICU because you're going to do a news report on it, a story on how this drug's affecting everybody. And what do you see the doctors doing? You see this shelf that's full of all this medication, and you see the doctors walking around talking to the nurses, and they're telling jokes and about their fish story, and you hear people in the rooms coughing and dying, and you go up and you say, is anybody going to give them the drug? And they're like, yeah, just in a minute, we'll give them the drug. Could you even be, I mean, it's kind of ludicrous, right? And these guys, these people who are seemingly healthy spiritually, are sitting there and they're asking Jesus, why is he hanging out with all these sinful people? And Jesus' answer is pretty dang simple. His answer is, they're sick. I'm a doctor. See, doctors don't hide the medicine away. Doctors don't pretend like everything's okay when it's not okay. Doctors heal the sick. And Jesus says to them that he has come to heal the sick. That's why he's there. And can I tell you something real quick? Let me read that to you, right? On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, right? But the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And here's what I know about a lot of us. Here's what I know about a lot of us is that we love that. We love it, but very few of us live it. Right? Like we love that Jesus came for the sinners and the sick. It's kind of hard to live it. It's kind of hard to be. Our church plant that we started in Wichita, Kansas, I had a guy come to me, and a guy in our church, he said, "Kent, there's this organization that deals with AIDS patients who are dying of AIDS. And they all had it for a specific reason that you can probably guess where it all came from. And they were not a Christian organization. But at Thanksgiving, they gave turkeys and a Thanksgiving meal to these AIDS patients who were dying." And he said, "Can't, I wondered if our church would want to help with that." And he was real nervous about asking me because he knew that it wasn't a Christian organization, and he knew, like, they did some stuff that, like, as a church we even disagreed with. And he was like, I don't know how you're going to take this. Like, he was real kind of nervous about it. I was like, yes, Yes, I want to help with that. I want to be involved in that. And I'm telling you, it was a hard decision to make as a pastor because I knew that there were going to be people who did not agree and had a problem with it because of some of the other moral things that were happening with that organization. But do you know what the problem was? There were these lost people who were dying, and I have the cure. And as long as Christians hold the cure to ourselves and we're too afraid to get involved with people who might just not look like us and might just not have it all together and may get, guess what, may just be still living in a sinful lifestyle, as long as we hold the cure to ourselves, we're no better than those Pharisees. Because I'm telling you, Jesus came, he was a doctor, and there were sick people. And when I got asked that question, I thought, I know the doctor, and these are sick people. And I was willing to navigate some really difficult waters because it was the right thing to do to care for these people. See, Jesus tells us why he eats with those who are on the outside. He tells us why he's willing to put his reputation on the line, right? It's because they're sick, and he's a doctor. We say all the time that Jesus came for the lost, right? And we'll say that. And what we really mean is that he stepped out of heaven, he came in a particular time, and he came to reach lost people. But we forget that what it really meant too was that he was God with us. Like he actually was with lost people. He didn't just come to save their souls. He came and he dined with them. He came and he gave himself to them. He knew them. He was friends with them. He was there when they said off-color, inappropriate jokes. And it was kind of like, woo, he was a little too far, right? He was there for all of that. He was there. Jesus was God with us. Listen to me. Eating together, it is a powerful way to open the door to people. And what it says to them is it says, I care enough to let you into my world. That's what it says when you eat together with people. Jesus did it. It was a primary piece of his ministry that he ate with them. So let me ask you this question. How are you going to implement the eat together practice in your own world? What are you going to do with it? Because it's one thing to love it, to go, oh, I love Jesus. He came for the sinner, he came for the sick, not for the healthy, right? Like, he came for the sinner, not for the righteous. That's who Jesus came. It's one thing to love that, and then there's another thing to live it. So what are you going to do? Hopefully you've got your circle of eight that you're praying for. What are you going to start doing? What if you and your family decided, you know what? What if we invited one of these folks from our circle of eight once a week, we just invited them over for dinner. If they could do it, that's fine. If they can't, that's okay too. Or what if you said, I'm going to start taking one of them out for breakfast. I'm just going to go every week with one of these Circle of Eight. We're just going to go out for breakfast. Or I have a buddy named Josh who does fire pit nights at his house. And he invites his neighbors over. He'll have a few friends from church or whatever, but most of them are just his neighbors, and they come over and they have a fire pit at night at this house. They do some s'mores and stuff. What if you did something like that? What if you started to actually not just listen to a sermon, but you took it and you said, I could do something about this. And let me just real quickly put this caveat on there. I'm not trying to make you feel guilty, okay? That's not the purpose of this. If you're not doing it, or if you're struggling with how you would do it, it's okay. This is about us saying, we don't want to just keep looking like the world. I want to look like Jesus. And so I want to figure that out. So how are you going to do it? Here's what I know about eating together, and really this applies to just about anything else you set your mind to. It won't happen unless you happen to put it on your to-do list, right? Like, if you don't happen to it, it's not going to happen, right? If you don't actually take a stand and say, you know what, I don't want to just talk about being like Jesus and living like him. I want to actually do it. You're going to have to make room for this in your schedule. You're going to have to say, you know what, we may have to say no to a few things in order to make this happen, to be available to people. You may have to actually put it on your to-do list and make it happen. That's going to have to be a part of it. This isn't magic. You can't just say, I'd really like to be like that, and you got to happen to it if you want it to happen. So, what are you going to do to make it happen in your life? I want to close by telling you a quick story about my buddy G, who owned an Italian restaurant in that same church plant. He went to the church plant. And G owned this Italian restaurant called Chow. And, oh, it was so good, man. Like, and our church didn't have a office. We didn't have a building. We would rent space. And so I just sometimes work from home, sometimes restaurants or whatever. G found out. And he said, Kent, you can just, I'll just give you a table at the restaurant and you can just work there. And I was like, sweet, man. So I would go and I'd work out of the restaurant. And it was awesome. Like I got unlimited refills on Diet Coke and like I'd leave and I'd be all hopped up from it. And, G would a lot of times feed me. I'd offer to pay and he wouldn't let me pay. I mean, it was just like best gig you could ever have, right? Like, and so I would sit there, but I think part of the reason G did it is because he knew I was just going to be praying for his staff and for his restaurant. And I would pray for whoever my waiter or waitress was that day. And it just so happened, I don't know if G set this up or if it was just how it happened, but there's a guy named Mike that I started getting kind of close to, and I was praying for Mike all the time. And I'll never forget, one day, Mike and I didn't force spiritual conversations with him. I just, if there was an opportunity, I would look for it. But I would just listen to him and I would just pray for him. And we would eat together. Sometimes like he would sit down and eat his lunch with me and we would just hang out. And Mike started having these conversations with me. One day we had this pretty deep spiritual conversation. I'll never forget as he left, he was like, man, it's crazy. Earlier I had two Catholic priests that were in here and we were talking about all this God stuff too. And I was like, Mike, man, God may be after you. Like that's the beginning of a really good joke, you know? Two priests and a pastor walk into an Italian restaurant. Like he's coming after you, man. And Mike was like, phew, I wonder if he, cause he didn't know God. And I will never forget the day Mike came in and told me he had started going to church and he said, Kent, I got baptized. I got saved last night. And we started talking about how incredible it was to actually know God. And I still to this day am friends with Mike on Facebook and I still will see posts that he puts on about playing drums at his church and all this stuff that Mike's doing and following his life. And I'm not telling you that story so you think, oh, Kent thinks he's some super cool guy who did. I didn't do much. It's fun to me that I wasn't the one who got to baptize Mike. I just had some conversations with him. Somebody else led him to the Lord. But I do know I got to be a little piece of his story. And what if you could be a little piece of somebody's story that someday you'll get to heaven and there will be all these people who aren't in hell. They're in heaven with you because you just did simple things like you reorganized your morning so that you could begin with prayer. And you reorganized your thought life so that you could actually really listen to people and care for them. And you reorganized your time so you could actually eat with them. And you started to have conversations and life-changing things happening because of the difference and the commitments that you made. What if someday you walk into eternity and there's all these people clapping for you? Can I tell you something? As I was getting ready to preach this morning, I was praying over our service. I personally have been feeling kind of this cloud. I don't know any better way to say it than feeling kind of a cloud in my life lately. Just kind of hard to get through, hard to know what to do and what. And I was just praying against that. And I was just praying that God would help us to see him today. And Jesus reminded me of this passage in Revelation chapter 3. And he reminded me of it right before I had to preach because the scripture says this, that he says, behold, I stand at the door and I knock. You know what he says after that? If anyone will open the door, if you'll open the door and let me in, I will come in and I will eat. I will dine with you. I will dine with them. Behold, I stand at the door and I knock. And if anyone will let me in, I will come in and I will dine with you. He still longs to eat with you. He still came for the sinners and the sinful, and maybe for you, that feels like it's you as I talk about it. You're sitting there going, I'm the one. I'm the loan shark. I'm the one who takes advantage of other people. I'm the one who's the Matthew. And I've sat there and I've watched Christians and I wish I could have what they have, but I don't know how to get it. And I'm telling you, it's as easy as this, that he stands at the door and he knocks. He's saying, I'm here. Would you please just let me in? Just please let me, if you let me in, I will come and oh, we will eat together and it will be so good. See, in a moment, Christians around this room are going to get up during this next song and they're going to go to the communion tables and they're going to eat this meal that we all eat together every single week, where we reflect on Jesus coming and he broke his body for us. That's what the bread represents. And he poured out his blood for us, and that's what the juice represents. And we're going to eat this meal and we're all going to remember the moment when he knocked on our hearts and he said, "I'm ready to come in." And we are going to eat with him. This morning, some of you in this place, the meal that you need to partake of next is not with somebody who's a neighbor or a friend or whatever. The meal you need to partake of next is the one where you open the door to Jesus in your life and you let him in. And he comes and he will feed you in ways that you have no idea that you could be fed. This morning, if that's you, during this next song, there will be several of us up around the stage. We would love to talk to you about you learning how to open that door to Jesus. This is your time. Partake of this meal. This is yours. Will you guys go during this song? Stand with us and sing.